Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and welcome to the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. This is a space for down-to-earth, honest conversations about what's really going on in your body in your 40s and how to support yourself through it. If you're feeling a bit out of sync, overwhelmed, or just not quite like yourself, you're in the right place. So let's get into today's episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast with me, your host, Francesca. So in today's episode, I wanted to talk about something that a lot of women find frustrating, confusing as well, and for some of us quite emotional, and that's weight gain as we move through into our 40s and through our 40s, particularly the weight that seems to just settle around the middle with no explanation. Maybe your jeans are feeling tighter than they used to feel, and other clothes, you know, your maybe workout leggings or something, just suddenly feeling tighter than they used to. And maybe you found yourself even having to buy clothes in a bigger size, but you feel as if you've not changed anything. You're not eating any differently. You're not moving any differently. And so that's where the frustration, the confusion, and the emotional piece can come from, of course. Maybe you look in the mirror one morning and you just thought, I don't recognize my body anymore. So if that's you, I really want you to know that you're definitely not alone. As frustrating as it can feel, you're definitely not on your own. This is one of the most common concerns that women bring to me in my private practice and through the Midlife Thrive community membership. But despite how common it is, I also think it's one of the most misunderstood aspects as well of health, of perimenopause, you know, of life generally. Because when weight starts changing in our 40s, we're often just given very simple advice still today, which really is it astounds me that we're still given such sort of basic, simple, I wouldn't even say basic, but advice that's not really understanding of what's actually going on. So that basic advice of eat less, move more, count your calories, cut them down by a certain percentage, do more cardio, try intermittent fasting, cut out carbohydrates. And that's not to say that any of these elements, that there isn't an element of truth to any of these things, because there is. For certain people, but they don't explain what's actually happening inside your body. They don't explain why something that worked perfectly well in your 20s or 30s suddenly seems to stop working now. And that's exactly what we're going to explore today. Because this episode isn't really about calories. It's a conversation about physiology. So if you've listened to episodes 93, 94, 95, maybe 92 as well, you'll know that we've been talking about something that I'm referring to as the whole body shift. So the idea that perimenopause isn't simply a hormone problem, although of course hormones are evolved, and that's the that's what characterizes perimenopause, is the shift in estrogen and progesterone. But it's not just that, it's a whole body physiological transition. A whole body shift. Your brain changes, your nervous system changes, your sleep changes, your muscles change, your metabolism changes. And the way that you regulate your blood sugar changes, even the way your body responds to stress changes. And nowhere do we see all of those changes come together more clearly than when we look at body weight. So today, I don't want to just give you, you know, another list of weight loss tips, eat less, move more, and cut out carbs. Instead, I want to help you understand what's really happening inside your body physiologically, because I really believe that when we understand what's going on, that brings empowerment. And that's why I named the podcast what it is, Empowered Perimenopause, because when we understand what's happening, we can, you know, why something's happening, we can stop blaming ourselves, we can stop thinking it's us, and, you know, it's just what happens to us, it's our body failing, whatever it might be, and or we're eating too much, we're lazy, we're not moving as much. We can stop doing those things. We can stop assuming we've suddenly just lacked willpower, become lazy. And instead, we can start making decisions that actually support the body that we're living in today, which is different to the one we were living in 10 years ago, 20 years ago, even 5 years ago. You know, I noticed my body has changed a lot even in the last year, and then even more so in the last 6 months. So that's what I want to do today, is help us to understand. So before we go any further, though, I just want to address something that can sometimes feel a little bit controversial. So you may hear people say calories are all that matter, or perhaps you've heard the opposite of that. Calories don't matter at all, it's all hormones. And I don't think either of those statements tell the whole story. It's kind of like something in between, because energy balance, so, you know, calories in versus calories out, of course still exists and still plays a role. Our bodies can't escape, you know, the laws of biology. But what often gets missed is that perimenopause changes the energy balance is happening within. And that changes everything, because suddenly your body might be burning energy differently. It might be building less muscle. It might be responding differently to stress. It might be becoming less sensitive to insulin. It might be sleeping less well. And all of those things influence how easily or how hard, how difficult it is to maintain the body composition, you know, fat to muscle ratio that we once had. So yes, calories still matter, but they're only one piece of a much bigger picture. It's all about the body that we're working in now, where things have changed. And if we focus only on calories, we're missing the opportunity to support all of the systems that actually influence how our bodies use, store, and burn those calories. So in other words, weight regulation isn't controlled by one thing. It's the result of a lot of different systems constantly talking to each other. And during perimenopause, every single one of those systems starts to change. That's why today's episode isn't about trying harder, eating less, moving more. It's about understanding your body better. The goal isn't simply to lose weight. The goal is to become healthier, to become stronger, to become metabolically resistant, more metabolically flexible, to build and preserve muscle, to support our nervous system, to improve your sleep, to nourish your body well. And when we start focusing on building these aspects of health, these foundations of health, then a healthier body composition is usually the natural consequence of doing those things. And it's not always overnight, but much more sustainable than constantly chasing a number on the scales. If we're constantly chasing a number on the scales, there's a lot we can do to get that number to go down. We can do drastic things, we can do temporary things, get that number to go down, but we won't keep it down. And in the meantime, we're usually doing things for our health that work against our health, and particularly against the changing hormonal landscape as we move through perimenopause. And you're likely to keep yourself stuck in a cycle of reducing that number on the scales, then it goes up again, and so on and, you know, so forth. You could get stuck in that cycle for years. So it's a much kinder way to approach our health, is to think about, you know, if we do have a weight loss goal, that we are first and foremost wanting to improve health, wanting to get stronger, I'm wanting to address all these elements, these foundational elements that I've just talked about, and I talk about in practically every episode. And that is that natural side effect of weight, you know, losing the weight we need to lose. So let's start by talking about the very first piece of this puzzle, and that's your metabolism. So despite what you've probably heard, your metabolism hasn't just suddenly broken. It's simply adapting to a very different hormonal environment. And one of the biggest myths that I hear, my metabolism has slowed down. Now, there's some truth to that statement, but it's not the whole story. It's not as simple as that. It doesn't just slow down. When we simply say your metabolism slows as you get older, it almost makes it sound as though one day your body just decides to stop working properly. Oh, I'm going to slow down now. As though your metabolism is just packing up, going on holiday, like got to a certain age, I'm just gonna slow and kick back. And it's not a very helpful way of looking at it, because it's also not very empowering. It's really disempowering. You're like, oh, my metabolism slowed. It must be that, you know, age related, and that's it. I think it's more accurate to say that your metabolism is adapting to a completely different hormonal environment. So this whole new environment, this hormonal shift that's creating this huge all systems shift in the body. And now your metabolism is adapting to that. It's a whole new landscape that wasn't the case in your 20s and your 30s. Because metabolism isn't just one thing. It's not an organ. It's not a switch. It's a collective name that we give to all of the sort of chemical processes happening inside your body every single second of every single day that keep you alive. It's not just about weight regulation. It's how your body turns the food that you eat into energy. It's how it builds new tissue, regenerates, repairs cells, produces hormones, supports your immune system, keeps your brain functioning. It's happening all the time, whether you're asleep, walking, listening to this podcast, walking the dogs, lifting weights in the gym, whatever you're doing, it's always, always functioning, working in the background. And all of those processes are influenced by the systems that we've been talking about throughout the series, your hormones, your muscles, your nervous system, your thyroid, your sleep, your blood sugar regulation. They're all interconnected and part of metabolism. So when those systems start to change during perimenopause, it makes sense that the way your body uses and stores energy changes as well. Not because it's slowing or failing, it's literally because it's adapting to this new landscape. And I think that's a much more empowering way of looking at it, because if something's, broken, failing, there's very little we can do. If we're going to think about metabolism as slowing down, we just assume all there's little we can do about it. It's age. But if we look at it as something that's adapting to this new system shift that we experience as we go through perimenopause, we can adapt alongside it. Okay, so what do we need to do to support it, to help it to adapt and become, working in its very best way again? Now, one thing I think is really important to say here is that weight gain during perimenopause isn't inevitable. We talk about weight gain a lot when we talk about hormone change in perimenopause, menopause, and that is because it's common. It's definitely more common, but it's not inevitable. It's not guaranteed. And equally, struggling to lose weight isn't a sign that you're failing or doing something wrong. Oh, you're one of the unlucky ones. It's usually a sign that your body needs a different approach. So in our 20s and often as well, into our 30s, particularly the first half, a lot of us could get away with quite a lot. I mean, when I look back now, even at 38, 39, even at 40, I could get away with a lot more than I can now. But 20s and early 30s, wow, we really can. Like, we can skip breakfast. We can live on coffee until lunchtime. We can do a ton of cardio and HIIT training. And we can sleep 5 or 6 hours. We can drink quite a lot of alcohol. We can grab whatever food's convenient. And somehow our body seemed to cope. And that, not everyone, but a lot of us, the body was okay with all that, seemingly. That doesn't necessarily mean those habits were supporting our health, because obviously behind the scenes, under the hood, we didn't know what was going on, but it seemed that our body just had a greater capacity to compensate for it, which it did back then. But perimenopause reduces that margin quite significantly. And the more we move through, like I say, even when I look back at 40, I could get away with more than I could get away with now at 46, 42 as well. But the further we move along, that margin does reduce even more. It's almost as if your body just becomes sort of less forgiving. So the little habits that barely affected you 10 years ago suddenly start having a much bigger impact. And again, not because your body's failing, your body's weaker, this is just it. It's because it's working much harder to maintain balance whilst your hormonal landscape is changing so much. And it can be quite quickly as well, especially as we move more in through our 40s. And I actually think that that's one of the most important things we can understand, because once we stop comparing ourselves to our 30-year-old body, which I know is so just, we do it. I catch myself, I have to remind myself, stop it. Just stop comparing yourself to your 30-year-old body. I say it sometimes and I have to catch myself, because it's not fair. It's mean. So instead of comparing ourselves to our 30-year-old body, we can stop expecting 45-year-old physiology to respond to 30-year-old strategies. It's not fair, and we shouldn't be doing that to ourselves. And that can be incredibly freeing, I think. If I can give myself permission at 46, almost 47, to say, well, I'm not fighting anymore with all the things, how my body responded when I was 35, or how it looked when I was 35, and what I could get away with when I was 35. I'm not going there anymore. I'm freeing myself of that. That's a choice I'm making. Now, one of the biggest reasons metabolism appears to change during 40, moving into this phase of life and through it, it isn't actually because of age itself. It's because something really important is changing as we move through. I've talked about this before. You've probably heard it a ton of times as well on social media, and that's our muscle. Such an important aspect of health, and it's changing quite significantly. And I honestly think muscle is one of the most underappreciated organs in the body. It's actually an organ. A lot of us grow up thinking of muscle as something that's just mainly about appearance. It's something that holds our body up. We just sort of see it as a structure or athletic performance or lifting heavy weights to get big muscles. But muscle is so much more than that. It's one of the most metabolically active tissues that we have. It's constantly using energy. It plays a role in helping us to regulate our blood sugar. So in that way, it influences insulin sensitivity, how sensitive the cells in the body and the brain are to insulin, which is really, really important. The more muscle we have, the more sensitive our cells are to insulin. Muscle supports our bone, of course. It's, you know, supports us from having breaks when we fall, and also supports the strength of our bones. It supports our balance. It supports our strength, our mobility, our independence as we age, which we may not feel we need to think about right now, but we should, and we do. If we want to spend, you know, the next 40 or so years being independent, but even about now, it supports all of these things right now. And you'll often hear muscle described as the organ of longevity. And I've talked about this before. And I think that's a really lovely description of it. Because when I refer to longevity, I mean living a longer, healthier life, not just a longer life, but an actual healthy, independent life. And the muscle, your muscle is the organ of healthy longevity. Because preserving muscle isn't really about looking toned in a sleeveless top, you know, having toned legs. It's about giving your body the capacity to stay healthy for decades to come. And the challenge is that from around our mid-30s onwards, we naturally begin losing muscle unless we're actively giving our body a reason to keep it. And that goes for men and women as well. It's a concept. It's something called sarcopenia. It happens to everybody from around mid-30s. So we do want to be doing things to preserve and continue to build new muscle from that age onwards anyway. But as estrogen declines, that process, that sarcopenic process, can accelerate during. So for women going through perimenopause, we've already got the fact that process is happening, men as well, but it seems to accelerate for us as estrogen declines. So what that can end up looking like is my metabolism has slowed. So because you're losing more muscle, that process is accelerating, and muscle literally is this organ that keeps our engine firing off, you know, running optimally, essentially. It can feel or look like my metabolism has slowed because now I'm gaining body fat, particularly around the middle, and, you know, and I'm not doing anything differently. Actually, at least in part, you know, I've gradually lost some of the tissue that helps keep my metabolism healthy. So can you see how different those two statements are? So one suggests there's nothing we can do. Oh, my metabolism has slowed down. I'm in my 40s. That's it. The other one reminds us that something's happening because of a process, a transition of a life phase that we're going through. And therefore, we can do something about it because we can support it. And that's really hopeful, isn't it? So because, of course, aging is inevitable, losing large amounts of muscle is not inevitable. So metabolism slowing down isn't inevitable because there are things we can do to preserve the muscle that we have and build new muscle and counteract the fact that it's that we are actually naturally going to be losing it from mid-30s anyway, and that sort of accelerates in perimenopause. We can do something about it. So we can absolutely support our bodies by giving them the signals that they need to preserve the muscle they have and build new muscle. And those signals are actually quite simple. We need to use our muscles. We need to challenge our muscles, e.g. lift, push, pull, weights. And we need to nourish them. And that's why if you've listened to me for any length of time, you'll know that I talk about strength training and protein so often. And it's not just, you know, not because I'm obsessed with the gym and I'm obsessed with protein. I hear a few people on social media say things like, I'm fed up hearing about how important protein is and lifting weights. And I hear that. I do hear that it can feel annoying if it feels repetitive, which I do think, I mean, social media is just repetitive anyway. But it is true. Because when we build muscle, we're not just building muscle, we're improving the whole environment that our metabolism operates in. And that's a very different goal from simply trying to just burn more calories, right? Eat less, move more, and then, you know, burn more calories and you lose weight. You're unlikely to lose actual body fat. You'll be losing muscle mass. So that's a very different thing. So we've just talked about muscle and why preserving it is one of the most powerful things we can do for our long-term health and metabolism. But muscle doesn't work on its own. One of its closest partners is insulin. So we've talked about insulin sensitivity a moment ago. But now, if you've heard the word insulin before, which if you listened to previous episodes, you may have. If not, you might only know of insulin in terms of diabetes, which is very common. If I have conversations with people sometimes socially, and when we talk about blood sugar or insulin, they're like, but isn't that only if you have diabetes? And so that's quite a common thought. But insulin is not something that only matters if you have diabetes. Managing blood sugar is not only important for people who have diabetes. Every single one of us relies on insulin every day. It's one of the most important hormones involved in how we use and store energy. So let me just sort of explain. So whenever we eat carbohydrates, any carbohydrate whatsoever, and to some extent protein as well, but mostly carbs, they get broken down into glucose. That glucose enters our bloodstream. As a result of the detection of that glucose in the bloodstream, our pancreas releases the hormone insulin. And you can think of insulin as like a messenger hormone. Its job is to say to your cells, there's some glucose available in the bloodstream. Let's move it out of the bloodstream and put it into the cells where it can be used for energy. And one of the biggest places glucose is stored and used is our muscles. So that's another reason that muscle matters so much, because your healthy muscle mass, having plenty of muscle, acts almost like a sponge. People refer to it as like a glucose sink. It's a sponge. Essentially, it's like a sponge that soaks in, if you can sort of try and picture it. It will soak in very happily the glucose from the bloodstream and either use it for energy there and then or store it for energy later, something called glycogen. So that's a storage form of glucose. It's one of the reasons that physically active people with good muscle mass, if you see these people that are not quite well built, they tend to have better insulin sensitivity. They tend to, you know, we say, oh, you can get away with eating anything and you just sort of burn it off. And that's essentially because the more muscle mass they have, the more sensitive their cells are to insulin. So the more they're soaking up that glucose from the bloodstream. And that is a beautiful system. That system is working beautifully until it starts becoming less efficient. So one of the changes that we can see during perimenopause is this gradual decline in insulin sensitivity. In other words, our cells don't respond to insulin's message as effectively as they did before. And that doesn't mean everyone develops insulin resistance, so cells that are now resistant to insulin as opposed to sensitive to it. And it certainly doesn't mean that everyone is heading towards diabetes, but it does mean that our bodies can become less efficient at handling carbohydrates than they were, say, 20 years earlier, 10 years earlier, even 5 years earlier, depending on where you are in perimenopause. And this is where so many women get confused, because they'll say, but I'm eating exactly the same as I've always eaten. Why should I be eating the same amount of carbs that I've always had? And they are, you know, it's not that they're lying. They're saying that they're like in denial. They probably totally are eating exactly the same. The problem isn't necessarily that you're eating differently. It's that your body's responding differently to the same food that was fine 5, 10, 20 years ago. And now it's not. And that's a really important distinction, because again, the body hasn't suddenly stopped working. Things haven't suddenly slowed. It's adapting. So as estrogen fluctuates and gradually declines, the way we regulate blood sugar starts to change as well, because estrogen is actually a really important hormone for supporting blood sugar regulation and supporting insulin sensitivity. So when that starts to fluctuate and when we take it away, that impacts those two things. So that means meals that once kept us feeling energized for hours can now leave us feeling really hungry soon after. we start to need to eat more frequently because that glucose hasn't been soaked into the cells for energy like it was before. We might notice stronger cravings in the afternoon, more energy crashes, maybe more brain fog. We need that glucose efficiently getting into our brain cells. We want our brain cells to be sensitive, and that can change. So that can bring on brain fog, brain fatigue, or that familiar feeling of needing something sweet at 3 o'clock or just needing a lie down at 3 o'clock. These aren't just signs of poor willpower. They're usually clues that your blood sugar regulation is starting to change. And when blood sugar becomes more unstable, when we're getting these swings in blood sugar levels throughout the day, no longer fluctuating within the normal range, it starts to become harder to manage your appetite, your energy, your mood, your sleep, and your body weight. And I want to be really careful here because I don't want anyone listening to think, okay, carbohydrates are the problem. That's right. That's what I'm going to do. They're not the problem. They're very important they're an important source of energy. The body loves glucose. The cells love glucose for energy. And a lot of them are packed with fiber, vitamins, minerals, if we choose the good stuff. So the goal isn't to fear them or take them out, go on a ketogenic diet. The goal is to help our body handle them better, handle them well. And one of the best ways we can do that is by thinking less about eating carbohydrates on their own and more about building balanced meals. So it's usually not the carbohydrate that's the problem, it's how they're being eaten. You sit and eat a plate of rice by itself with hardly any protein, it's going to have a much different or bigger impact on blood sugar levels than it would had you had that rice with half a plate of fibrous vegetables and plenty of protein. That same amount of rice will have a much better impact on blood sugar levels. So it's looking at meals that contain a good source of protein, a good amount of protein, some healthy fats, and plenty of colourful fibrous vegetables, and ideally carbohydrate that contains fibre, like, a whole food form. And appropriate portions as well. So I like to say like one closed fist size. Close your own fist and have a look at that. That's ideal. That's an ideal portion of carbohydrates to have on any plate. If you're eating that meal post intense workout lifting session, then yeah, you could probably have two fist sizes, but otherwise about one. And that can be different from person to person, but that's just a rough guide. Because protein, fiber, and healthy fats, they'll all help to slow the rise in blood sugar after a meal. And that's exactly what we're trying to support. And it's one of the reasons you'll hear me talk so much about protein. Not because protein is trendy. And this is what I mean when I hear people a lot on Instagram now saying, I'm fed up of this protein trend. It's not a trend. It is really important. And that's not because I think everyone needs to live on protein shakes and 100 chicken breasts a day. It's because protein genuinely supports so many of the things that we've already talked about today. It helps us build and preserve muscle. It helps us feel fuller for longer. It genuinely does. It supports steadier blood sugar and therefore it supports insulin sensitivity. It provides the building blocks, that's the amino acids that protein is made up of, that our bodies need to repair and maintain tissue. It's one of the simplest, most powerful things we can focus on during perimenopause. Now, if you're thinking this blood sugar and insulin stuff feels really important, you're right. It absolutely is. It's so foundational and it's one of the key foundations. In fact, it's so important that I'm going to dedicate the next episode entirely to blood sugar. So we'll go into that in more detail in the next episode. Because once you understand how blood sugar regulation changes during perimenopause, so many pieces of the puzzle start to fall into place and you start to understand things like why cravings happen, why you're getting these energy dips, why you might be feeling shaky if you skip meals, why you're getting more irritable if you skip meals. And then you're understanding why protein becomes more important, why muscle matters, and why some eating patterns that worked fine in your 20s just suddenly stop serving you. And that is really empowering, like I say, because we can also start to forgive ourselves, give ourselves more compassion and say, okay, it's not your fault. I'm not just lazy. I'm not just eating too much. It's actually potentially the opposite. I'm just not focusing on the right things as much as I should. Okay, so before we move on, there's another piece of this puzzle that we can't ignore, because even if you're eating really, really well, even if you're strength training, If your body feels stressed most of the time, then that changes the conversation, because I don't think we can have a conversation about weight during perimenopause without talking about stress. Now, when I say stress, I don't just mean feeling overwhelmed at work or rushing around after children or caring for aging parents, doing loads of things at once. Absolutely, all those things matter, but I'm talking about stress in the sort of broader physiological sense, because your body experiences stress in a lot of different ways. So yes, there's emotional stress, but there's also poor sleep, skipping meals, you know, waiting too long to have breakfast, and obviously under eating, over exercising, too much high intensity stuff throughout the week, long fasting windows, inflammation, illness, blood sugar crashes, alcohol, even constantly feeling like you're running on empty. Your body doesn't necessarily separate those things into neat little categories and say, oh, it's just, she just had a drink last night, let's not include that, or, you know, she's got some chronic inflammation going on in the background, let's just not include that. It's always simply asking one thing: am I safe? So it wants to know, what, am I safe? Do I have enough energy? Can I afford to relax? Or do I need to stay on high alert because I'm not safe? And during perimenopause, because of the changing hormonal landscape that we've been talking about throughout this series, a lot of women find that their nervous system becomes a lot more sensitive. And it's almost as though the volume gets turned up. I've talked about this many times previously, but just have to say it again in this episode. So things that used to cope with quite comfortably before suddenly feel a lot more draining, a lot more, you're more reactive to things. Maybe you recover more slowly, whether that's from workouts, you know, long walks, or just stressful episodes. You can become overwhelmed more easily. You might feel more wired, but really tired, so tired but wired. And that's not just something you experience emotionally, it's something that your whole body experiences physiologically as well. And why does it matter when we're talking about body weight? That's because one of the body's main stress hormones, as we know, is cortisol. And cortisol is very important. It's not an enemy hormone, it's not a bad hormone. Without cortisol, we wouldn't get up in the morning, we wouldn't get onto things, we wouldn't, you know, respond appropriately to challenges, we wouldn't survive. So the problem isn't cortisol itself. The problem is when our bodies spend long periods of time feeling as though they need to be producing it, feeling like I need to keep producing it, because dysregulated cortisol can start to influence appetite. It can make us crave quick sources of energy. It can make restful sleep harder to achieve. It can affect blood sugar regulation and insulin sensitivity in a roundabout way. And then over time, it can start to contribute to changes in where our bodies prefer to store fat, so particularly around the middle. And again, not because your body's working against you, it's trying to protect you. Our bodies are very clever, and when they perceive ongoing stress, they start to become much more interested in survival than in maintaining the body composition that you had when you were 30. And I, like I said earlier, I find that quite comforting, because it just reminds me that my body isn't trying to sabotage me. It hasn't just suddenly started to fail as I move through my 40s. It's trying to adapt and keep me alive. It's adapting to the new landscape that's going on, this physiological shift. It just hasn't realized that answering emails at 10 o'clock at night isn't quite the same thing as being chased by a tiger and having to run for your life. Like I say, it doesn't just pocket these little things and say, oh, that's okay, she was just answering emails. It sees this as a stress, and it's trying to protect you. So here's something else I think is really important. Sometimes when women are frustrated by weight gain, their instinct is to go harder. To eat, okay, tomorrow I'm just going to eat even less. Tomorrow I'm going to skip breakfast. I won't have lunch anymore. I'll eat less at dinner. I'll exercise more. I'll go to a different class. I'll squeeze in another HIIT class this week. I'll fast for longer at weekends. I'll push through the exhaustion. And whilst those strategies might seem logical, I mean, we have been told for decades that that's what we should do. And it seems logical. Okay, if it's not working, just do more. But that way of thinking can actually add even more stress to a body that's already feeling stressed and reacting to that stress in a way that's potentially leading to excess belly fat. And, you know, remember what we said. Perimenopause doesn't mean your body's failing on you. It's adapting. And when we respond by asking even more of it, do more, exercise more, eat less, then we unintentionally make things harder for it. It's trying to adapt. And now it's like, oh, I just don't have, now I have even less resources to adapt. And this is why you'll hear me say a lot, I encourage women to become more curious about what's going on rather than critical. And I said this in a sleep episode, it's so easy to be really frustrated with yourself, with your body, when you can't sleep, you know, you're going through a phase where sleep just isn't good. And we can become really critical. What can I do? What should I do more of? What should I do less of? And what we really want to do is become curious about what the symptoms, you know, the fact that we're struggling to sleep are trying to tell us. So that was in the previous episode. So instead of asking, how can I make my body burn more? We want to start asking things like, what does my body need from me right now? Does it actually need better nourishment, not less? Does it need better? Does it need more protein? Maybe I have to increase the size of my meals because there's just not enough nourishment on my plate. Change the balance of those meals. Go for a walk outside each day when I can. Strength train instead of another exhausting cardio session or HIIT class. Have an earlier bedtime, even if it's just 15 minutes earlier. Can I take 5 minutes to breathe in the morning before I get started into my day? Can I take another 5 minutes in the halfway mark just to breathe before I have lunch or after my lunch, preferably before, so then you can digest your lunch better? Can I have a proper lunch away from my desk and actually take the time? These things might sound like small things, but they all send the body the same message. You're safe. You have enough, you can stop fighting now. And whilst those habits, they might not sound as exciting as the, you know, the latest weight loss trend that you see online or get told by some people who still just don't quite understand what's going on physiologically, I genuinely believe that these are some of the most powerful things that we can do for our long-term metabolic health. And I know that, you know, they might sound boring, they might sound too simple. How can just going to bed 15 minutes earlier or taking 5 minutes to breathe in the morning or before my lunch change anything and change my weight? I honestly believe, and I've seen it, obviously I understand it on a physiological level, scientific level, but I've seen it with clients, I've seen it with myself. Pull back, take 5 minutes, and it actually has a powerful effect on your metabolic health. And I just want you to remember that we're not trying to force the body into losing weight. We're trying to create the conditions that it needs so that health can flourish, basically. And then when your health can flourish, which is something that as we move through perimenopause can, you know, like I've said, unless we can help it adapt to the new hormonal landscape and the shift, it can feel like health is going downhill. And what we're trying to do is help it adapt, help to create those conditions that your health can flourish. And when that happens, a healthier body composition, healthier weight is usually what follows as a natural side effect. Not because we've fought our bodies into submission, oh look, I've completed this plan and now I've lost weight, but because we've actually supported our bodies, we've supported our health, we've put those foundations in place, we've addressed them all, maybe one by one. And now, you know, not necessarily 4 or 6 weeks later, but sometime later, we have now got this body that we're really happy with. But it's also something we can maintain because we're not going to change all of these new sort of foundations that we've got in place. We're not going to change them. It's not like they've come to the end of their program and now we don't have to do them anymore. We've learned how to support those foundations and we're going to continue forever because they're not horrible protocols that we're only going to do temporarily. And what we've done there is we've started working with our body instead of against it. Now, there's one more piece of today's puzzle that we have to mention. Again, I've talked about sleep in the previous episode in depth, so go back and listen to that if you haven't already. But that really influences almost every single system that we've talked about today. And it's more quality as opposed to quantity, which I also talked about in the previous episode, 95. So I won't go into everything that I talked about in last week's episode, but I just want to remind you why sleep matters so much when we're talking about body weight. Sleep isn't just about feeling rested. It's one of the foundations that supports almost every system that we've talked about today. So when we don't sleep well, our appetite regulation changes. We tend to feel hungrier, of course. You probably all know that after even just one night's sleep, calorie consumption can increase quite significantly. We tend to crave quick sources of energy when we're underslept. Blood sugar becomes more difficult to regulate. It can become more unstable. like just sort of naturally when we're underslept. And then insulin sensitivity can reduce. Recovery from exercise can be slower, so we may not want to push too hard on an underslept day. Building and preserving muscle can become more challenging, and our nervous system has less opportunity to reset itself because it's doing that while we're asleep. So hopefully you can sort of see how sleep weaves itself through almost every part of this conversation. And that's why I usually say that sleep starts the moment we wake up. Sleep is influenced by what we do throughout the day, by how much daylight we get, by how much we eat, by how much we move, by how stressed we are, by the routines that we create. And because sleep affects so many other aspects of our physiology, it's not something we can ignore and hope that everything else just falls into place. But if sleep is a struggle for you at the moment, I really would encourage you to go back and listen to episode 95. It doesn't mean you're doomed at all and that you can't achieve anything, you know, any results in any other area if sleep is bad. It's just that we just want to look into what, get curious what your body might be trying to tell you, and then support it. So yeah, go back and listen to episode 95, because improving your sleep can have that ripple effect on so many other aspects of your health, including your relationship with food, your energy, your resilience, your mood, and of course your body composition and weight. So after everything I've just banged on about, you might be thinking, okay, Francesca, what do I actually do? And I think that's where we need to be really careful, because the temptation is always to look for another quick fix, another diet, another challenge, another set of rules, or, you know, just tell me what to do and I'll do it. Give me something I can just follow. But I think perimenopause is asking us to, it's not asking us to become more restrictive. It's asking us to become more supportive. So I would just encourage you to, you know, instead of asking, how can I eat less? How can I push more? Instead, ask, how can I nourish myself better? How can I actually give myself probably more than it? And so, yeah, instead of saying like, you know, how can I burn more calories? What sort of exercise will burn more calories, burn more fat? Think about, how can I build more muscle? Because the more muscle I have, the more of a metabolic sponge my muscles are for soaking up the glucose from insulin. And therefore, the more I get to regulate my body composition and lose some of the excess body fat that I have. And instead of asking, how can I lose weight as quickly as possible? This is a big one. Instead of wanting to do it as quickly as possible, we should ask, how can I become stronger, healthier, and more resilient? Because when we shift our focus towards how I can become stronger, how I can become healthier, that's when something really amazing happens. Like the side effect, so sort of many of the things that, you know, support our health and support our strength, they also happen to support a healthier body composition. So eating enough protein with every meal, eating your breakfast and having plenty of protein with your breakfast, strength training regularly, 2 to 3 times a week, walking every day, managing stress, prioritizing sleep, supporting blood sugar control, eating enough rather than constantly under eating and depriving yourself. They're all helping to create an environment internally where your body can start to function well. When your body functions well, the natural side effect is usually, if there is a weight issue, it becomes less of a battle and it naturally gradually falls into place. And there you are with a body that you look at and say, wow, I've lost the weight I wanted to lose and I'm feeling and looking stronger. And that's not necessarily because the scales suddenly plummet overnight. That's not what's going to happen. And they may not plummet, you know, because as you're building more muscle, that's going to essentially weigh more than body fat potentially for a lot of us. And so I always encourage people anyway, don't be looking at scales. I don't care how much I weigh. I have no idea. I actually haven't weighed myself for years. I care what my body composition is, how much of it is muscle, how much of it is fat, and how I feel in my clothes. And I know what clothes size I particularly want to wear. And as long as I feel comfortable in that size, then I'm good. So perhaps the biggest shift I'd love you to make after listening to today's episode is to stop asking, how do I lose weight? And start asking, how do I build the healthiest, strongest version of myself? Because they are two very different questions. One keeps our attention fixed on a number, obsessed with our weight and how much we weigh. And the other one keeps our attention on the things that really matter for now and long term. Building muscle, supporting our nervous system, sleeping well, nourishing ourselves, moving our bodies in ways that feel good and supporting our metabolism, looking after our long-term health, future health. And what's amazing about this is that when we begin focusing on these things and laying these foundations, then our relationship with our body usually begins to change as well. And we stop seeing it as something that's working against us, And we start to recognize it for what it really is. It's this beautiful body that's adapting to this whole new crazy terrain that it's not been met with before until now. And it's doing its very best to protect us through this enormous physiological transition. And it deserves our support, not our criticism or punishment or pushing. And the result of, you know, supporting all of these different things is that we achieve the weight naturally that we want, without having to do drastic things or potentially negative things or, you know, detrimental things, and without yo-yoing in a way that is sustainable. So I hope today's episode has helped you understand that there's just so much more to the story than calories, eating less, moving more. Yes, calories matter, but they're only one piece of the puzzle. During perimenopause, the factors that influence how your body uses, stores, and burns those calories are changing. And that's why understanding that the whole body shift really matters. So next week, we're going to dive even deeper into blood sugar and insulin sensitivity, which hopefully after listening today, you realize how important they are, how foundational they are. And in the meantime, if you're looking for ongoing support, you want some deeper education and alongside a community of women navigating this stage of life with you, including myself, then I'd love to welcome you into Midlife Thrive. It's where we take these conversations much further. We help you to understand your body, make sense of your own symptoms, and then give you that sort of practical steps forward to support yourself. So I'll leave the details in the show notes, and you can take my free perimenopause quiz if you want a bit more personalized insight into what your body might need right now. I'll also link to that in the show notes. And if you want a one-to-one consultation, that'll be linked in the show notes as well. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this episode and you're wanting a bit more support, there's a few ways I can help you. You can take my free perimenopause quiz, join my Midlife Thrive membership, or work with me one-to-one, and I'll leave all the details in the show notes. And if this episode resonated, I'd love you to share it with someone who might need to hear it too. Thank you so much for being here. It really means a lot. And I'll see you in the next episode.